The following audio is from Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashville, Tennessee, where our mission is to follow Christ in His mission of loving people, places, and things to life. For more information about Christ Presbyterian Church, please visit christpres.org.
This morning's scripture reading comes from John 17, 20 through 26. I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given to them, that they may be one, even as we are one. I in them, and you in me, that they may become perfectly one, so that the world may know that you sent me and loved them even as you loved me. Father, I desire that they also, whom you have given me, may be with me where I am, to see my glory that you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. O righteous Father, even though the world does not know you, I know you, and these know that you have sent me. I made known to them your name, and I will continue to make it known, that the love with which you have loved me may be in them, and I in them. This is the word of the Lord. Praise be to Christ.
Thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. Good to see you. Hope it's a good morning. Are y'all there? Good morning. Is this a good morning? Or is it a bad morning to you? Glad you're here this morning. So good to see y'all. My name is Stacy Croft. I'm the pastor here, and hope it's been a good week, if it's been a spring break for you or if it's been a work week. Either way, hope it's been a sweet week for you. I know some of you are wearing green. Yes, I actually unintentionally wore green today. And then I was like, yes, it worked out perfectly because I don't want to be pinched, and hopefully you will not pinch me or anyone else for that matter. That'd be strange. I don't know who made that up. There are a lot of things I've read about St. Paddy's Day, but that's one I have not read where that came from, the pinching thing. So let's not do that. Anyway. Well, growing up, I'm originally from Texas, and I grew up as an only child, and my parents in Dallas when I was younger got separated and when I was in middle school, and I remember growing up as just kind of in that environment. I've always been kind of an extrovert, even though I was an only child and out of the house and enjoyed being out and doing a lot of things and being with my friends, but I remember growing up with my mom and doing a lot of work around the house and doing things, and my mom actually surprisingly became a Christian, a follower of Jesus, a few months before my parents split. And that was kind of a unique thing for me because I still have memories of her being kind of different, you know what I mean? Like actually taking on and learning what it meant as an older adult, what it meant to follow Jesus. And she was really like thinking through more and more, what is the Bible? What does mean to be a part of a church as we kind of looked for a church together? And I still was learning what it meant to even be a Christian. I wasn't one until later than her. And watching her, one of the things that I picked up from her that I remember distinctly as she was growing as a follower of Christ was prayer. And I remember she would either wake me up or it was before we'd go to bed, and we would pray. And really, it was mainly her praying. I would kneel next to her. And she would pray, and sometimes I would fall asleep. I'd just be like arms like this, and I don't remember if she was. I'm sure she woke me up, or she would just keep praying. And but what was sweet about that was not that she just prayed, but she was teaching me about prayer. She's teaching me about herself. As she prayed, she was kind of unpacking her own heart before the Lord, and I was there to kind of receive that, to learn that, and even to pick up, maybe I didn't know as a young middle school boy everything about my parents and their relationship, but I remember picking up how it impacted her, how she was doing, what she considered herself before the Lord and with her friends and those kind of things, it was really unique to me to hear that and to take that in. You know, we've been looking, and we're actually ending today. We've been looking at, it's called the Upper Room Discourse. It's actually a section in John's Gospel. So there are four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, where John takes the time, different than the other three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John takes the time to unpack this upper room moment where Jesus spends with his disciples this last evening. And he teaches them. And in John's Gospel, it unpacks it so much that you not only get to hear the teaching, you get to hear the kind of retorts from the disciples or questions, like they just blurt out stuff here or there. But the Upper Room Discourse ends in this chapter 17 with Jesus praying with them. And John records it for us, so we get to see it. And in this prayer, it's not that he just prays, it's also that what he prays, they get to hear it. And we're so used to, in our culture, like when we do prayer, you know, it's like bow our heads, fold our hands. Like, that's actually not in the Bible necessarily, that you have to pray like this. Like, they might have honestly been just staring at him while he was praying. Because in this prayer, and last week Kevin Twitt was able to teach us beautifully on the first kind of two-thirds of this prayer, really about the disciples and about Jesus himself. Today we're looking at the final third, and it's really speaking to us. And this is amazing. It's amazing the fact that we get to hear Jesus' heart in his prayer. Not just about himself, but about you and me. And I don't know if you ever thought about Jesus praying. Many times maybe you do in the Gospels, you see him go off and you'll read something or you'll hear he went off and he was by himself and he prayed to his Father. Here it's not that. Here it's he's in the room, the apostles are in there with him and they're listening to his language, and whether they were attentive or not, they're picking up on where is Jesus right now? What is he talking about? And they're learning not only how to pray, but who they are in prayer, their importance. And I've told you this before, that we would get to a moment in this Upper Room Discourse where the pronouns change, and it doesn't just talk about the people in the room, it starts talking about you and me. And I'll tell you what, it is something to think about Jesus Christ praying for us. I mean, we struggle with often, I'm sure, thinking, gosh, I don't see Jesus. They saw him. They were in the room, right? And yet he was thinking about us, praying for us. You're in his mind in this. And so as we look at this, we're going to look at what is Jesus praying about? And he's praying about one thing, and we're just going to see the marks of that. So one point we're looking at today, he talked about oneness, being one. And what does it mean, and why? Why of all things that he could choose to pray for in that moment, why does he pray about us being one? And you're going to see that in several marks in this as we kind of walk through this passage together. but I think it's really important for us, though. As you think about one and what it means to be one, that the marks of this teach us what it means to follow Jesus and to love him and to love one another. So as it begins, even in verse 20, and you see this break here, and this is where the last third of his prayer goes. It says, I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word. Again, remember, I do not pray for these also. What's he saying? These in this room, the 11 apostles who were remaining in the room. Judas has left. He has already gone about the business of betrayal, and we saw that earlier in this discourse. And so he's saying, these in this room. I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, those who would come after. Now, this is a unique moment because part of what he's praying when he's talking about them being one, it begins with the teaching that goes out. It begins with the word that proceeds. And where would it go? It would go through the apostles. Notice, he's been talking about my word, my word, my word. But at this verse, he says, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they would leave that room and the word would go out and then others would come to faith. In fact, the reason we're sitting in this room right now, and if you would say you're a follower in Jesus, would be because that word left that room and was carried out. And it's considered because the apostles' teaching. Now, what is an apostle? We've used that word a bunch. The Bible defines an apostle as someone who followed Jesus through his ministry and saw him resurrected. So we would not be apostles, okay? But they followed Jesus through his ministry and then saw him rise from the dead. From the dead, they saw him resurrected. That was the mark of an apostle. But what the apostles really did was they were like lawyers. They didn't make up teaching and write a bunch of letters. That's what we're used to. Oh, the apostle Paul, he wrote Ephesians, right? Well, he didn't just write Ephesians based on just nothing. The apostles were law keepers of the gospel, the events of Jesus Christ, who he was and what happened. And so the oneness, what it means for us to be one, as Jesus prays, begins by us being through and on the truth, the word that comes from the apostles. It starts there. It's not just one like, hey, we're one because we gather together and we just have the Bible. It's actually one because it begins with a solid truth of the apostles' teaching. And I'm going to get a little more teachy here for a second, but I want to explain how we get the New Testament, because it has everything to do with the apostles. See, the New Testament has a number of tests on it and the reason why it is what it is. And the first one really is because it was written by or written around the apostles. The reason we have the 27 books of the New Testament is because the apostles didn't just, you know, decide these are the books. They were the ones that either wrote it, like John, like we have here, or those who were around them, like Mark, who followed Peter, right? Or Luke, who followed Paul. They were with the apostles, and it was written by them. And it was orthodox and included in it because it connected to whom Jesus was. They made sense of one another, the teaching of the apostles. And it was used, and here's the clear marker of it. The reason that these books are in the New Testament, and the reason we, our whole life of who we are as followers of Christ come from it, is because they were used in early worship. Now, I know we have all these thoughts of, like, you know, all the Da Vinci Code stuff or all these things, and there's that argument of who decided what was in the canon of the New Testament. The only reason, and this is saying to you, is that the books in the New Testament were circulating in worship long before. That the apostles didn't choose this or that. The apostles had wrote these and or was around that, and it was circulating in worship. So that the oneness, what made them one, wasn't that they said, well, we're going to choose this and make it. It was what was already out there. The good news of the gospel was already circulating in worship. So that the base, the foundation, this is why you read in all the letters like Paul and Peter and others, they say it was on the base, the cornerstone of the apostles, is that we don't just do church or things based on, well, let's just gather together because this is what oneness is. No, no, no. Oneness has to start with a firm truth. And the apostles were merely keepers. They were law keepers of it. They were guardians of that. They didn't make it up. They kept it and passed it forward. That is the New Testament. That's where it begins. And then in verse 21, it says that they may also be, that they may be one as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us so that the world may believe that you sent me. Now, if you notice anything about when he talks about being one, he says it there and he says it again in 22. The glory that you've given me that I have given to them, that they may be even one as we are one. And then in 23, I in them and you in me, that they may become perfectly one. One, 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 over and over again, you see? Now, but every time that Jesus mentions what it means to be one, he doesn't just say it in terms of, hey, may they be one and together. He always connects it to something else here. And if you notice, what he does is he connects it to something even more profound than any of us would thought. He says, that they may be one, in verse 21, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you. Jesus begins to say that the oneness that we have is supposed to be like the Trinity. Now, that should make us go, but it is. Jesus is saying that our oneness, what makes us one, should be experienced like Jesus' relationship to the Father. Look, I worked on a campus. Many of you know this. I was a campus minister and a chaplain, actually, at Vanderbilt University for a long time, and that was something I inherited. And in both of those circles, as a campus minister and a chaplain, all throughout the year, one of the biggest things that would come up was, hey, unity. How do we show that we're unified, right? How do we show that we're one? How are we on the same page? And I'll tell you what, without fail, that happened over and over and over. In both those circles, it would come up, and maybe even in some different ways, but similar in the same vein, that it's like, we need to show this campus that we are one. And most of the time when I had those conversations with students or chaplains or other campus ministers, it was interesting. The question was like, why are we needing to be one? Like, what are we really wanting to show? Well, that we're united, right? One, we're unified, we're united, we're together. Okay, what does that mean? What does that look like? We should do this event, and we're gonna do this event, and when we do this, everybody will see it, and they'll be like, oh man, that's what it means to be a Christian. But here's what's interesting about it. What is the basis? Let's just break it down. What's the basis for being unified? It was the event. Is an event what shows that we are unified? Now, I think here's what's interesting. We're so used to that, especially even in churches, especially in a place like Nashville where there are a million different churches here, right? What makes us one? Is it just you're in the building? That we're gathered together? Like, it would be easy to say, okay, what church has the most going for it? What church has the largest this? What church has this programs, these kind of things? What church has... You can kind of look and go, and does that point to being one? What is the marker of that? Over and over, what I encountered, especially on campus, and I see it in us subversively outside of a campus, is what we mark being one or unified is we need to break down any barriers so we can show and gather together. But what always happened after the event, big flash. Everybody was like, this is awesome. And then it was like, hey, when's the next event? What were they looking for? The event. There was not necessarily people doing things together or showing that. What is Jesus telling us? Jesus is telling us that oneness that he prays isn't just based on the apostles' teaching and its truth. It's to be experienced. And the way it's supposed to be experienced isn't by an event. It's by a relationship. It's by the deepest, most profound picture of that relationship in the Trinity, that Jesus prays that we would experience what it means to be one as he does with his Father. That is a lot different than what we think. We think what would show this world that we're unified is if we gather together a lot, but that's not what he's saying. He doesn't even mention that. He says that they may also be in us so that the world may believe that you have sent me. He says the reflection into this world of what it means to be one is how you actually are in relationship with each other. It could be the smallest group in the world. And yet if we're reflecting that deep, profound connection and relationship that the Father and the Son have, Jesus, that's what it means to be one. That's what changes. That's what melts people, isn't this, hey, let's do, and events, look, events programs are great. I'm not downing those. We did them all the time. We would do events sometimes with 1,200, 1,500 people at them on a campus of 6,000 undergrads. You do the math. That's a lot. That's almost, what, a third of the campus? I'm not good at math, right? It's not good at all. Lower. It's like half. It's higher. No, I'm just kidding. All my math friends are looking at me. It's crazy. But what does it really mean? What it really means is like a friend that is a former campus minister there that still, he and I talk all the time about how do we encourage one another how to love our students? By showing that we just spend time, and they go, y'all spend time together? I remember sometimes I'm asking, y'all actually spend time together? Yes, we do. More than just putting on some show. What does it mean for us to actually love and enter in? The other thing that is a marker here in verse 22, it says, is the glory, and I don't know if you picked up on this, it says, the glory that you have given me, I have given to them, that they may be one even as we are one. Verse 24 says the same, Father, I desire that they also, whom you have given me, may be with me where I am to see my glory that you have given me because you have loved me before the foundation of the world. These passages over and over are alluding to something, that there's something given, that Jesus gives to us what he has, that we have a marker of being one is that we have what Jesus has. Like when he prays this, he says, the glory that you have given me, I have given to them. He says that about that. He even says in verse 26, that the love that which you have loved me may be in them. That is really profound. Kevin Twitt talked about this last week beautifully when he talked about the glory of Jesus. When Jesus prays earlier on in this prayer, he prays for his own glory, which may sound a little bit like, is that arrogant? But it's not. Because glory, the language, the word glory and what it means, isn't Jesus saying, look how great I am. If you understand what he's talking about, where he's going next, glory actually speaks to being robed or clothed in splendor, but it points directly to the cross. So it's this paradoxical understanding of glory that he's clothed in splendor, and yet it's not one like what we think. Jesus wants us to have the glory that he has, and it's given. Most of the time when we think of what oneness means and what it means to show Jesus, it means we show with glory and power and strength and authority that we've got it together, that we're going in the right direction because we're one. But if we understand what it means to be one, it's being one united under the cross. It's that his glory is not about self-promotion. It's about what he's given us. In fact, what oneness should be for us, if we're reading this correctly in verse 22, the glory that you have given me, I have given to them, is that there should be a profound humility. That the glory that we show is a profound humility to a world that looks in and says, that's glory? And yet they're united around it. They're united around the same fact of this one who came in flesh and didn't show that he knew everything, but that he went to the cross. Next week, Palm Sunday, that we celebrate not someone who rode in on a horse celebrating his victory and his might as a military leader, but who rode in on a donkey, the colt, the foal of a donkey, so low, and yet received all praise, and that his road wasn't to a throne, it was to a cross. It was to disgusting abuse and horror. And yet that's his glory, because it turned, as he said, I have overcome the world. And because it points to the fact that we are loved as he is loved. It's given, not taken. I want you to read this, and I think this stirs me every time I read it, not just in the glory, but in verse 26, when he says, I made known to them your name, and I will continue to make it known that the love with which you have loved me may be in them and I in them. I wonder how often you and I think that, Jesus, you know, I'm loved because in Jesus, or I'm loved by Jesus. I think we need to retool our thinking. Jesus' prayer of what it means for us to be one, to have what he has, means you and I understand that we are loved by God as Jesus is loved. You have the same love. And it's not something that you have to earn. It's not something you have to make up. It's not something you have to figure out. It's that it's given to you. It's given. And he loves you because you're his. There's something that I learned years ago from a friend of mine long before my kids got older, and I say it to them, and still I get answers from them sometimes when I say, okay, why does daddy love you? You know, why does daddy love you? Sometimes they're like, I don't know, you know. Sometimes they've said things, you know, in the past, like, I don't know, maybe because I did well today. I didn't talk back today. I'm doing okay. Things are running smoothly. But really the answer to them is one that Jesus is saying to us here is, No. I love you because you're mine. And when you really sit in that, when you really sit in the fact that Jesus' prayer for you, the language as the other apostles are sitting around in that room, not knowing you, but knowing he's praying for beyond them to you and I to say that you are loved because you are his. If you really sit in that, there's nothing else you can say but to be melted by that. There's no other way you can look at God at the end of the day or at the beginning of your day and say, God, okay, I'm going to try and make it better today. I'm going to, you know what? Or when you go to bed at night and think, okay, I'm doing okay on that pattern of sin or problems I have in my life. I'm handling it okay. This is a good day today. I mean, you are loved because you are his. And Jesus, as you're reading here, you are given to Jesus by God the Father. There is nothing that can change that. This prayer for you, and I would encourage you, if you're especially in a place where you just are like, I know God loves me. I would beg you, take these seven verses, and make this your prayer for the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, month. Pray what Jesus is praying about you, so that you could hear his words towards you. Centuries ago, recorded by John the Apostle, knowing that you are his. The reflection of what it means to be one is not just us getting in a room together. And it's not us just saying those things that we all say, the Christian lingo. It's living, experiencing, and showing the relationship that the Lord has with us. And that's, if you notice, what happens here. At the end of most of these, the word sent is shown. Verse 21, that they all may be one just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us so that the world may believe you have sent me. Verse 25, O righteous Father, even though the world does not know you, I know you, and these know that you have sent me. You know, one of the number one themes of John's gospel is the word sent. And it's a Greek word meaning missio, missionary. appropriately so. We're all wearing green, St. Paddy's Day. I know we're used to green rivers and green beer and all these things and pinching, as we said, and wearing, you know, the Blarney Stones and all that jazz. We've very much Americanized it. But you know the actual truth behind who St. Patrick was? It was in the 5th century, he was actually a teenager that was kidnapped and enslaved. He was actually a British teenage boy. He was kidnapped and enslaved in Ireland. He escaped some years later, only to come back. He became a Christian while he was enslaved, only to come back later to Ireland. And Ireland at that time was a place that was considered it was literally called this, the ends of the earth. No one wanted to go there. The way women were treated was horrible. The way humans were idolized and worshiped there was awful. There was so much about that place, and yet what happened was God sent him. Sent him back to a place that no one thought he would go back, to bring the good news back to a place where everyone was only anything but enslaved. Like, this table is everything about what it means that Jesus was sent. John uses the word sent over and over for us to know that we're being sent because the sent one, Jesus, has come. This body and blood, this wine, juice, crackers that we take in every week is to remind us that we get to experience how loved we are as Jesus is loved. It's that profound and that simple. It is to not just jog your memory, but to overtake your soul. And especially if you're here and you're dabbling, maybe you're kicking the tires of the church and Christianity and you're kind of trying it out, and maybe you're kind of in that place of that. This is a place for you to, don't just come take of some table that may seem like a rote traditional ritual, because this is anything but that. This is actually what it's called communion, communing with the Lord God and one another. This is actually proclaiming that you are communing with the God of the universe. Is that weird? I mean, if you stop for a second, especially if you're here and you're like, I just came through the doors because I wanted to see what was in this place. You're like, they're talking about communing with the God of the universe. You know what? He has set this up so that you can know that your relationship is fully in him. It is through Jesus. It is through his work, the sent one to you, so that you, by being one, can go out and show that oneness, not in a way of, look at all the cool things we've got going on, but look at how we are loved and love one another. That's what changes. You are sent because of the sent one to you. Thanks be to God. Let's stand together.